You're listening to
How Yoshi Did It
Podcast with Yoshi Obayashi.
Don't you ever be sad. Lean on me when times get bad. When the day come and I know you die in a river of trouble, you're about to drown.
All right, this is a really quick conversation with my ex-roommate Dave Johnson. I'm visiting Seattle, and I don't know what we were talking before, but I just want you to know you helped me a lot living with you, and you've always been an honest stand-up guy, so thanks for your help. And I just want to have you, I'm ending my podcast, I just want to make sure I at least put people that helped me over the years on the show, and you know, talk to them. And
well,
anyway,
that's a very nice sentiment.
Thank you. And Dave, make sure you take the mic all the way close to your mouth. I have a really cheap equipment.
Oh, well, nothing's changed.
Put a black mic like some of the John Stelliano's movies. So, yeah, closer maybe?
Oh,
yeah.
It is close.
Yeah, it's...
All right.
Here we go. So I met you in 1999
yes.
at the Adult Video News Convention.
That's correct, in Las Vegas.
And I met you through Tanner Manu and Brody Stevens. And so how did you know? I mean,
Tana,
if you don't,
Brody?
You don't have to use names, but I guess you were watching a show.
I was a contractor in Seattle at the time, and I was doing work at TCI Cable, remodel work. And I also had a friend of mine whose son had a cable access show. I don't remember the name of the show, but he did a fairly controversial show on TCI Cable. And so between that and me working there, I also ran into Tana and Brody. They didn't know me. I just, you know, was there a couple of times when they were doing their, you know, setup and what have you.
Isn't that crazy? I've known you 17 years. I never knew this. I just figured you were just watching their show and you knew them, but
no,
I didn't know you actually met.
Literally, I never watched their show. I just met them in the thing. And then it was at the Sahara in Las Vegas when Tana and Brody came down and were doing their show. They were doing a remote. So anyway, they came down, and I was at the Evil Angel booth behind the counter.
This must be at least 98 or earlier, right? Because 99, they moved to Venetian.
Yeah, this was 96, I think, or 95.
Okay, so you know him. So you knew those guys like 20 years now.
Yeah.
Because I met you in 99.
Yeah, TCI Cable, I was doing work in their thing probably in 94.
Okay.
93, somewhere in there. But they were, we just recognized each other.
Sure.
You know, visually saw each other and was like, oh, hey, you're from Seattle. And we got talking. And of course, those guys are very outgoing and easy to talk to.
Yeah.
And they're looking for any kind of way to improve their show. Not that I was improving their show. It's just that I'm behind the counter with the girls. And so obviously maybe I have an ability to help them talk to the girls. Which wasn't the case because those guys are pretty good at talking to women.
Yeah. And I think that was the last time Brody went with Tana, really. After that, he really didn't go again. Nothing against porn, but it just doesn't work out. But that was my first trip to Vegas.
You would have come the year after. It was the year after.
I went to 1999 when Brody and Tana, we drove from his house in L.A., and that was my first trip to Vegas ever. And... they knew a lot of people, but it was very strange to see John because he's, you know, in that business, he's the biggest guy in the business, right? At the time.
Well, there's a number. Yes. Well, he, you know, the gonzo porn and all that type of thing. John is, you know, one of the fathers of that.
Yes.
He's very good at that particular thing. It's kind of nice to watch that type of porn where hello, miss, hello. And then John has his buttman shtick that he uses when he's very effective at it. So, I was at that time, sure, he was, he still is way up at the top.
Sure.
But there's a lot of people in the pornography industry.
And we headed off because, of course, it helped that you're from Seattle and things like that. But I think we were talking about this a couple of days ago, and – people who are going to convention these days, they don't know how amazing the Evil Angel booth were.
No.
Because I'm sure it's nice still, but it's very modern, metal, and well-made construction. But back in the day, when you're involved with Bob Lee and Brockton,
yes,
these, how would you describe the what they were using for that?
I think the idea behind it is to look like a dive kind of bar almost.
Yeah.
Because it was all made out of wood and wood paneling and what have you.
And when you construct it and when you break it down to the leaf,
it came apart in panels.
Yeah, it was involved quite a bit of work.
Yes, absolutely. Very heavy, and you got to move it and store it again and you know, all that type of thing year after year. So I was involved in that basically from then on for the next probably dozen years,
yeah,
if not longer,
until they decide to go to the like a modern look. It
That's
almost
looked
like a Nokia kind of modern setup.
Yes,
you know?
Yes, yeah. Yeah.
But I love the old style.
Or IKEA, you mean IKEA?
IKEA. Yeah. I like the old setup because it had this carnival.
All the neon signs.
Yeah, it had this carnival feeling to it.
Right.
And Evil Angel back then was so different from other company because it was old school, fun, and they probably had the best directors, and most of the top non-contract performers want to be at the Evil Angel booth.
Yes.
So, yeah, I guess like anything else in life, it changes. But you, Bob, and Brockton did a magnificent job, and I really miss that old setup. It's almost like, remember that show on NBC, Cheers?
It's
where all the fun people want to drink in Boston. Well,
yeah.
All the pervert came to the Evil Angel booth, you know.
Yeah, there were quite a few of them there behind the counter and in front of the counter. But yeah, no, I would agree with you. I enjoyed that. It was a lot of fun because I was part of the setup crew and then they'd tear it down. And then we would just do the maintenance during the show and
sure.
any little things that they needed us to do. And it was a really a nice thing to do. A lot of fun for me. But those days have ended.
And I guess you met John through one of the economic conference or something, right?
Yes. John, I don't know, many people know this, but John has a degree, a college degree from UCLA in economics. He's a pretty sharp character. And he has an ongoing interest in that type of thing, primarily from the free market perspective. And so I was going to the at that time there was a libertarian magazine, free market magazine called Liberty, and it was published in Port Townsend, Washington, and almost every year they would have a Liberty Editors Conference.
And I
made it a point to go to that because it was really interesting. Like, I met David Friedman there, among other people of that stature.
And David Freeman is Milton Friedman's son.
That's correct.
And he's super libertarian guy. And can you hold on for a second?
Sure.
Okay, sorry, we're back. So it's a Liberty magazine and
Out of Port Townsend.
Port Townsend, yeah.
And anyway, they would have their Liberty conferences maybe every other year they would have it. And this one happened to be in Tacoma. And I was at the conference, and it was early on a Saturday. It was the first session, and I don't remember who the speaker was, but most everybody there was wearing a suit and tie, or was at least business casual.
Yeah.
And most of them would be like instructors and professors, and that people that would be interested in economics. And I was sitting in the back of the room, and the chair next to me was the only one that was empty. Everything else was full. And I see this guy walk in the door who's with shorts on, and I look and I go, oh, shit, that's Butt Man. I recognized him right away because I, consumed a lot of his work, so to speak.
But you didn't know at the time he was a libertarian.
I didn't know any of that, but you know.
So you must have been really surprised.
Oh, yeah. I was like, plus he's a little bit out of place in the sense that he's wearing shorts and, not flip-flops, I don't think. But he was, he was pretty casual, less than business
casual.
That's
all California, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And but he came in and, he had the brochure and everything for the convention. He was obviously a participant with the name badge and everything. And he came in and he looked around, and the only place to sit down was next to me.
Yeah.
So he sat down there, and then we started talking at different times. And
when did you tell him? Did you tell him right away you knew who he was, or?
Well, we listened through the session, and then because we were sitting next to each other, we spoke to each other, and then we got talking, and then you know, we kind of hit it off.
Yeah.
We had similar interests, and I don't know if I really brought up the fact that I knew who he was right away.
Yeah.
Because that wasn't the purpose of the convention.
Yeah.
But it was for me to be talking porn with him. But, you know, we had lunch that day, and I think we had dinner or lunch the next day or something.
Wow, so that quickly you guys hit it off?
We did. We had a fairly common interest. Well, economics and porn, so, yeah. You know, that was the two things that kind of brought us together. And then, of course, sports.
Well, you know, whenever I have a conversation with you, I think about two things. Dismal Science.
Mm-hmm.
Was it... no, it wasn't David Ricardo. Who said that? Malthus. That he did the whole thing of...
that could be. I don't remember, but that could
he
be.
He did think about...
Yes.
It's terrible because the growth of population cannot... The food production of food cannot match the growth of food. Therefore, it's inevitable that all these terrible things going to happen, right? Starvation, things like that.
Yeah, it's the difference between that the exponential curve of population growth as opposed to the linear straight line geometric of food production.
Right.
So,
but what they didn't anticipate is that. Innovation and creativity in science, in food production, things like that, right?
Absolutely.
So it's Dismal Science meets, and you know you've heard this phrase, how do you say it? Dimsel in stress. You know, you see this mythology where a girl's tied up to a tree and dragons guarding her.
No.
And a nice show. Damsel?
Damsel in Distress.
Distress. Right.
Oh, okay.
So it's Dismal Science means Damsel Science right here. Because
right.
I think out of all those groups, if you made a Venn diagram, one group is all econ, another group is porn.
Yes.
Usually those things don't really collide.
No,
you know?
No.
So I think John probably appreciates your friendship and everything. And I read years ago, one of the things that I really... respect John is he donated a lot of money to Institute, but they disappointed me because I think he said he donated money to Cato Institute, but some of the economists was uncomfortable receiving money for pornographers, so they don't really believe in libertarian with the social stigma stuff, you know. And
yeah, I vaguely remember some of that kind of stuff. I know, I mean, John is very generous with his donations to all of the different kinds of libertarian functions,
because
there's a wide gamut of them, and he's interested in all that kind of stuff, which parallels myself. I don't have his money. I've donated to a few things here and there, but I'm interested. You know, I want to know all the different ramifications. I want to make up my own mind, and I'm willing to let other people make up their mind on anything. I don't care what they want to experiment with or think about or whatever. I don't see that limits are a good way to go.
Sure.
And I think John's exactly the same way on that kind of stuff. That's my dog Dirty and Harry, and it's a little Shih Tzu, and he's disappointed that he's not in the conversation. So, but try to keep him out.
But later on, he found other institute that you know. We're okay with his porn money, you know.
Well, he's very involved with Reason, and Reason is
Reason Magazine.
Magazine, and he's I would imagine there isn't a person at Reason that doesn't know John,
right?
Because he has donated a lot of money. He's been involved in a lot of their functions,
sure,
and all that kind of stuff. But
I mean, that's how I remember. But I was surprised that Cato Institute has such a
Well, I stopped donating money to Cato early on. I haven't given anything to... When I get a solicitation from them, I throw it in the garbage.
And where are they? Are they in D.C.? They're in D.C., right?
Yes, yeah. And the reason is because they are really selective. I mean, they are so connected with the I don't know.
Republican Party or something? Yeah, or?
I don't know if I'd call it the Republican Party with the status quo.
Yeah.
That they're very very political about the way they argue their points. Now, sure. They do have some things that they that they've been very good. They do a lot of publishing, and
sure.
Some of their books are quite good. Probably all of them have something to say.
Yeah.
But I don't read into them very much at all. And a lot of that's because I got really upset in 2008 when they were panning Ron Paul. Because, yeah. I mean, they were just all of a sudden it's like, hey, we got a really great libertarian candidate and you sure. guys can't get behind him. But you're going to keep asking me for money?
What was the problem with them with Ron Paul?
I don't remember other than that they would not support him. They would not.
Interesting.
No, they were with the mainstream candidates and stuff because they didn't. I don't know what all their thinking was, but.
I don't know. I wonder how much the money influenced them, because I'm sure there's a big donors.
Well, they just built that huge building back there mm-hmm. in Washington, D.C. It was several million dollars, as I remember, when they all glass structure. Yeah. So they'd become part of the establishment, and they have to keep feeding that in the way they're operating. So, but I was looking for a revolution, still am, and it really upset me that they did that to Ron Paul. And then, of course, 2012, I was at the rally in UCLA down there when there was, they filled that whole stadium. And there were people sitting, climbing the trees on the outside to look in, and people standing around on the outside. I mean, we lined up for a couple of hours before we could even get in there. And that wasn't even covered. And he had many, many rallies.
I'm getting confused. Wait, is Ron Paul the younger son, or Ron is the father?
No, Ron's the father.
Father. And his son is in...
Well, Rand Paul's a little different. I mean, he's got...
he's more conservative, right?
Yeah, I would say so. He's more...
mainstream Republican.
Yeah. He's definitely kowtowing to all the different interests.
I see. And there's, I believe, Gary Johnson, was it? Is he the governor
Johnson,
of New Mexico?
Yes, that's correct. And he was a libertarian candidate last time, in 2012.
There is even talk about maybe he'll be on the ballot again or something, but...
Yeah. Well, I'll probably end up voting libertarian because I'm not voting for anybody else, I don't think.
You live in Washington State now, I live
correct.
In California,
mm-hmm.
but most likely... I mean, some of my friends don't believe me, but some of my friends think Trump's going to win California, but I still have to say, realistically, I think Hillary's going to win California.
I am so suspicious of the voting mechanism mm-hmm. out there that I think that most of these elections are fairly well rigged. I mean, even the general elections.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that every election is, but I mean, there's a website out there called Black Box Voting, a lady in Seattle here called Beverly Harris, and she has done a lot of investigation on how these votes have been manipulated with this electronic voting system. And it's hard not to believe that, in other words, they can go into the people would vote and then their votes are changed.
Yeah.
And there's no way, even the person who certifies that county or that precinct, they believe that they're given an honest vote. But the system is so rigged that that these things can be changed. And I don't know if they need to go back to a paper ballot or something else, but it makes me very, I think a lot of more people should be aware of that. It's more than just these caucuses and that where they're trying to get a candidate.
Yeah.
Because it goes even beyond that. Once they do get a candidate, then you end up having a general election.
Sure.
Where the candidates... the thing is, can be thrown.
Yeah.
In other words, I just don't believe the vote.
I just have a mixed feeling about the whole thing, but having traveled almost close to 50 countries in the world, it's still a better alternative out of all the places I've visit for me, but,
well, the illusion's better here.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. I mean,
I have a different preference, but it's just not going to happen. But if there's three policy that you could, you already know mine. It's always the drug war stuff. But even if it's not feasible within your lifetime, our lifetime, if there's three things you could change in what would you like? You know, some people want to get rid of minimum wage laws. Some people, you know, on and on. But,
well, I wouldn't be personally trying to. I think everybody has to make up their own mind. I would rather that everybody was their own sovereign, their own person. And I think that a lot of the reason that people aren't is because the money system is fraudulent. The money is basically counterfeit, and so people who control the money system.
Oh, you're not talking about money in political campaign, just money in general.
No, I'm talking about money in general, that because all the money is debt money.
Yeah.
That except for coins, but basically it's all debt money, and as a result, it's counterfeit. In other words, the person who can produce, who can make the money, which they.
So going counterfeit, yeah.
So they can, if you can counterfeit whatever you need, whatever money you want to make, and everybody else is operating on the basis that it's all got the same purchasing value all the time.
Sure,
that person can buy up whatever they want. They want to buy judges. They want to buy assassinations. Whatever. I mean, they basically have superpowers. They don't. And I think that's the only real superpowers that are out there, is that ability to create money. And once people understood that, I think that'd be my number one thing. If all the people could understand that and realize how they're being manipulated, that the voting doesn't do them any good, or anything like that, just realizing that their money's bad.
So is that what they call fiat money?
Well, yeah, fiat money is where you're creating money with paper or whatever. Yeah. It doesn't mean it has to be gold or silver or anything like that. But when they borrow the money into existence, they only, you buy a house and you get a mortgage on that house, and so it's $100,000. They've just created that $100,000, but they don't create the interest to pay that that's going to be charged on top of that loan. So all the people that have a mortgage, each of them, say $100,000 a piece, a million people or whatever, they've all only created the principal created that money, that basic money, but they did not create the interest.
Yeah.
So now when they all go to pay things back, they have to compete among each other to get portions of their neighbor's cut, the neighbor's portion of this pie, in order to pay back the interest. So it's a constant system of everybody dog eat dog and people fighting to get enough money to pay this interest to somebody that didn't even have the money to. They just wrote a check. They just wrote they just created this ledger account.
Yeah.
And so that's probably not a real good explanation, it's a difficult subject. And then of course I've spent a fair amount of time reading on it. So. But I'm not expressing it as well as I wish I could.
Well, you know, I think money is such a confusing idea, especially people with no money, you know, and
that's the thing, is the people that are creating it have no money either.
Yeah.
They just have the ability to create that money.
Like Federal Reserve, right?
They created about $800 million in that TARP, toxic asset recovery thing.
Program,
Right
after that whole disaster in 2008.
Yes, yeah. I mean, they just basically wrote a check. Kind of the way I look at the money system is that if I went and I wrote 10 $1 checks and I just wrote cash, as the person that's going to be, anybody can cash the check.
Yeah.
And then I did the same thing with wrote a $5 check 10 times or whatever. And then I started using that to exchange. Now, whoever I pay that $5 check to, they don't go and cash it. They just use it to spend it to buy something from somebody else because they believe I'm good.
Yeah.
That $5 check from Dave is good. And that's how we treat the government. They're just writing these checks.
Well, I mean, it's just people inherently trust the government when they print money and mm-hmm. the rest of the world. Like, our currency is different from most other currency because we're the most powerful country in the world. Like you were saying before, a couple of days ago, when you buy oil, it's based on dollar currency. So mm-hmm. there's a lot of faith. And really, if you're being honest, it's a piece of paper. But because everybody see value in it, it's valuable, you know?
It does have some purchasing power.
Sure.
But the more of it you have, the less purchasing power each individual sure. piece has.
And we, you know, if you know anything about history, we all hate inflation because look at the things that happened in Germany and mm-hmm. prior to World War II and even the rise of communists in China. It was because hyperinflation, when people realize whatever the money they have and all of a sudden it could purchase less, they panic because, you know, instability in their society. So they're inclined to vote some strong armed person say, hey, I'm going to make everything all right and willing to give their liberty. And, you know, the hyperinflation actually helped guy like Hitler and Mao Zedong because whenever people are scared and unsure about their life, they want to vote for somebody who's going to bring stability and, you know, safety net back, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Hitler's is known for having done debt-free money. That was how he got his, how he was able to turn around the that Third Reich when they yeah. got started. Because when he came to power, I think it was in 1933, if I remember correctly, you know, by 1940, he's in a world war.
Yeah.
And so you're talking about 7 years. And then it was in the early 20s when they...
the Great Depression.
Right.
And, yeah.
And then, of course, Germany had had lost the First World War. So all the Allies on the other side had... were ruling, they set up the Versailles Treaty, which was very punitive towards Germany.
Right after World War One, yeah.
And after that, and that's what a lot of that, that's where all of that hyperinflation came out of. Germany's just producing marks in order to try to pay that debt down. And of course, now they're, let's say there's only $1 trillion in the entire world, but I have the ability create money. I can write another $1 trillion check. Yeah. Now, I have half the money in the world, and I've done nothing. I haven't produced anything or anything like that. And but now I have half the purchasing value for purchasing power
yeah.
of all the money in the world, only because I have that ability to write checks.
Right.
And if people would understand that that's what's happening to their money system, they're all working on the first $1 trillion. They're all fighting like cats and dogs to try to pay off. And they're paying the interest to the guy that has the second $1 trillion all the time.
Wait, well, I got to go finish, mm-hmm. Do a quick thing with laundry. But when I come back, we'll talk just quickly about Milton Friedman's theory about money supply and stuff. Then after that, we'll jump into porn because we got a little too serious. We went from Batman to Nazis.
Maybe we should just go into porn.
but we went from Batman to Hitler. So anyway, give me a few minutes. I'll be back. All right, we're back. Just quick Milton Friedman yes. stuff, and I just want to hear your opinion. I just want to have your opinion about a couple economists, and we'll jump into a little bit of porn and done.
Oh,
I know your time's very valuable. Because I remember from Milton Friedman, he won Nobel Prize for the whole money supply theory. And you know, he basically said the government made things worse during the Depression because they didn't end the money supply, but what Milton Friedman said, he should increase the supply of money, right? That's what
yes,
he said.
He's a member of the Chicago School, and they believe that they can control, that they will create just enough money to match the growth
right.
in the economy. And that's the Chicago School of thinking.
I think the thinking was they were having, many businesses were having problems.
Mm-hmm.
If they increase the supply of money, banks will have more money to loan. But in actuality, I don't know the thinking behind, but they did the opposite. They
Well, they're doing it. They were doing the same thing that the Fed's doing now. That was the Federal Reserve. That was their mandate was, you know, there's keep the economy stabilized. So as business grows, they need to put more currency out there or more ability to borrow money. And in other words, to create more ways to more money.
Yeah.
And Milton Friedman was just setting a cap on that, 2% annual growth or 3% annual growth, thinking that, but to me, it's all really the same thing. You're having these overlords who are wiser than everybody else and are going to be able to figure out how this economy is going to move. I'm more along the libertarian or the Austrian school, you know, which would be what Ron Paul was talking about.
I think what Milton Friedman was doing is, he didn't want political groups pressuring the Federal Reserve when it's convenient for them. Like when they're running for office, they're losing. They want to make sure the economy is going, then they could take a credit and have the voters vote for them. And this interference that he didn't like. So he basically said, if I remember right, literally have a computer monitor the money supply and economy. And like you were saying, like increase by 2% or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And
but that assumes that that's a linear function that the economy is growing at that thing. See, I would say that the Federal Reserve is a political entity as well. They are a gang in their own right. Is they have all these different and the people that are in the Fed, they have their own interests and stuff. You're putting somebody in power. It's that old thing of who's going to watch the watchers, you know. Yeah. who's going to be over. Well, personally, I think if everybody's their own person and they can all interact, you know, this is probably utopian, but yeah, they can all inter
without, some people might call it anarchy, but
yeah, in some sense it is. And in fact, there is a
David Friedman believed that.
David Friedman's exactly. His son was the anarcho-capitalist, or one of them.
Yeah,
which
because
I think
it's
is
funny. They have made a reference to what is it like? The federal banks are divided into 12 regions.
That's correct.
Yeah. Right, and the Federal Reserve Chairman is the leader of the whole 12. Representative, right?
The primary bank is the New York Federal Reserve,
okay,
because that's the one that can takes care of the bonds when the Treasury is selling their Treasury notes or bonds and creating the money.
And so I think San Francisco is like another region.
But they're all private. They're all part of that cartel,
right?
Which is they're creating the money, and rather than see now the Austrians would argue that the that having hard currencies,
and their leader was Professor Hayek, right? Am I saying that?
Well, Hayek is one of them. He's that guy that wrote the book about
Road to Serfdom.
Yeah. No, Mises, prior to Mises, it's...
von Mises, that's right.
Yeah, yeah, and then prior... I mean, you would ask me this question. It starts with an M. Menger.
Okay.
He was one of the early guys that got this thing...
Yeah.
Got this line of thinking going. So, but it all deals with the individual as opposed to something over the individual. You know, that you all have your own individual rights and sovereignty, and or you're part of a group that's fighting other groups, and all that. I'm more in favor of everybody having their own sovereign rights. But boy, how do you enforce that without some kind of rules and regulations?
Yeah.
The Constitution is an attempt at that. So,
because you know, Milton Friedman always say one of his favorite countries that understand and basically promote his philosophy is Hong Kong. He loved that, you know. Many of the business
and British mandate.
What?
The British,
until what, 97 or something like that. But
right,
I think when I took econ class, I remember most economists actually agree, you know, how supply and demand, things like that works. But when they disagree, that's when they make news, you know. But most economists tend to be rational, and it's people get most...
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Well,
but, I think it's very difficult because I spend a fair amount of time reading on those things. Yeah. Well, not everybody has that time. Very few people do. And if they are, they might be, you know, reading something else, like one-handed books.
Yeah.
But
when I took the econ classes, I was worried about econ classes.
Yes.
And I thought accounting is going to be easy. To me, it was completely the opposite.
Oh.
Accounting made no sense to me.
Yeah.
Whereas econ, when they explain things like opportunity cost, which even if you don't take econ class, that's a really good concept to know. I think it helps people. And I thought, wow, this is such a fun, rational thing. You know, it just make you think, see the world differently.
It does help you, the logic.
It should be mandatory for people to take. And I think part of the problem is, I think most people are curious about money. They are curious about inflation and supply and demand and, you know, why some people are for and against minimum wage and international trade and comparative advantage, all these kind of things. I think sometimes maybe they don't have a good representative explaining those concepts in a way that average person can understand. But it really is the king and the queen of social science. It's the only, you know, it's one of the few things you get Nobel Prize for. I think it's very important, but for most people, it was never a mandatory class, I don't think.
Well, see, I'm not in favor of any mandatory classes or whatever.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to learn about that, I mean, some people may, I mean, you look at these guys on the street that are running drug, you know, that old show, The Wire.
Yes.
I mean, and that was great watching those guys out there putting their organization
together.
Exactly. Well, everything. It was just how to set up an organization, how to make it run. And they all doing the same thing there as any business. You have competitors and you have problems. You have the things to deal with the government. You have taxes. There's all kinds of stuff. So I don't believe anything should be mandatory. And we're not like, now the latest controversy is about the transgender bathrooms, you know, where they want to have all that kind of stuff.
What do you think about
in
that?
In schools. Well, I go back to the thing, well, there shouldn't be any public schools to start with. Why should why should you make somebody go to a, you know, you're mandating a child, your person, a parent, two parents have a child or more, and you're, the government is forcing them to go to a government school to get government indoctrination.
Sure.
It's strictly the government's point of view.
I think Mel Freeman have this notion of free choice. Like if you should decide not to send your public school, you should get X amount of voucher because you pay income tax.
See, you're collecting the taxes, and I mean, you're forcing people. And the best thing, in my opinion, to do is to just let the free market determine it. If a parent wants to send their child to a school that has a transgender bathroom and there's no other schools out there and there's enough of those parents, there's going to be a school with transgender bathrooms.
Sure.
And I don't know what it'll teach, but that's not my, you know, that's up to that parent.
Yeah.
And I would be in favor of that kind of a schooling system.
Sure.
That would eliminate all that tax things, you know, all these, because there's people that homeschool their kids. There's some of the religious schools, although a lot of them are, you know, under dictates from the government. You know, if you're a 501c3, there's some things you can and you can't do. A lot of things you can't do or you're required to do in order to maintain that tax.
Exempt free
status.
Exempt,
So it's just, you got to look at your premises where, to quote Ayn Rand, although.
Well, Alex Gibney had a documentary where Scientology was able to persuade the government to treat them as an exempt
entity.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But,
I guess you're right about
What do you want to talk about? Porn. Not that I'm consuming that much anymore.
No.
Now that I'm a senile citizen, you don't have as much.
Because when you're growing up as a kid, you know, you didn't have access to. I mean, kids are so lucky, the access that they have now.
Yeah.
But if you live in Seattle, you pretty much have to go either. Sometimes 7-Eleven will carry them behind the back.
Well, when I was growing up, they didn't have the 7-Eleven.
That's true.
You know, it's funny. The grocery stores in those days would be open until like 6 o'clock at night. They would open at 8 in the morning and close at 6. And it's probably hard for people. This is in the 60s and 50s and the 60s. And then I remember when 7-Eleven came in, and 7-Eleven is their name indicated, they were open from 7 to 11. And I, as a little kid, I remember seeing a 7-Eleven.
Wait, that's what it means?
That's what it means. And I remember seeing this 7-Eleven.
I never knew that.
Yeah. I saw the 7-Eleven when it first got built. I lived in Renton.
Are you kidding me? That's what it means?
Yeah. And I saw, they built this 7-Eleven, and it was next door to, in those days, I think it was a Market Basket store.
Yeah.
And and I remember thinking, boy, they're really stupid. How are they going to, all you got to do is go over, why should I go and buy a 10-cent candy bar at 7-Eleven when I can run over to Market Basket and buy it for 5 cents? They're going to go out of business.
Yeah.
Well, what happened is a lot of people wanted the convenience of going shopping from 6 o'clock at night to 11 o'clock at night when the Market Basket was closed.
Right.
So Market Basket.
Thank God for free market.
That's right. So Market Basket, the way they reacted was they started staying open until the same hours as 7-Eleven. Well, then 7-Eleven went 24 hours a day. And now a lot of supermarkets are 24 hours a day, but we still have all those 7-Elevens out there.
Absolutely.
So none of that would have been, people wouldn't understand that until it actually came about.
Right.
Like radio in the early days, if you had a radio program and you're trying to put it on the air, how do you pay for it? Now, you could mandate it, which is like you would do with a public school system. Okay, we'll just take taxes and we'll put it, which is what NPR is. And I personally think it's National Propaganda Radio, because they're putting out the government's point of view. But the radio stations,
you let free market take care of it. And
that's what happened.
Yeah.
That's what happened. And they came up with these ideas of the commercials.
Right.
And that's how people were able to pay for it, which is... It's counterintuitive, and a lot of things in economics are exactly that way. So that's why I think I find it very fascinating.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into detail because it's too long to explain, but I've always been accused by my comedian friends like I am cold and mean to poor people because I don't like minimum wage law, but they don't understand that the minimum wage law hurt the very people you're trying to help, because people who ended up taking jobs out a lot are people with the least little or no job experience. And people just assume if you had a minimum job, everyone stay at that level for the rest of their life. And that's not true. Mm-hmm. But if you raise the minimum wage, then if you pay more for somebody, you're going to be more selective, and you end up hurting the very people you're trying to help. And people just go for gut.
Well, they're limiting things, is the way I look at it.
Yeah.
You're putting a limit on it.
Yeah.
And
for example, I do stand-up comedy. Yes. Vast majority of shows, I do it for free. But if they mandate that every comedian performer has to be paid, many of the comedians will never have opportunity even to start, because they're not going to pay for some inexperienced person. Internship is another one. They agreed to work at some place for free to get that experience. And
well, the same thing in the insurance industry, where you're having these, where the Obamacare has come out. And now they've mandated that you have to have this insurance. Sounds like a good idea, but I have one little dog left. The other one passed away last year. But if I have to he needs some care, I just take him to any vet.
Yeah.
And generally, they're going to sell you pills, but. That makes me feel better. I don't know if it necessarily makes the dog feel better, but I will. It maybe cost me $50 for a visit and what have you. Now they could come out and mandate that. Look, we got stray dogs on the street that are not being taken care of. We need to get an insurance program out there and force them into this whole system.
Sure.
And so, if you would mandate insurance for all the pets of the world, then obviously. The insurance company is going to love it, because you've mandated that you have to buy their product. And of course, costs are going to go up every year. And because the money's bad, the money is being created. So when you create more money, you're inflating it. That's the true idea behind inflation.
And we talked about this a couple of days ago. I think you kind of chuckle that in Silicon Valley right now, there's so many car companies are moving to Silicon Valley because they're anticipating that driverless cars.
Yes.
And people make this paranoia and fear about those vehicles, but who's the biggest proponent of promoting the paranoia? It's the insurance company, because people make more mistakes. People are more careless, and drunk driving and things like that. But if it's run by a machine, it's anal. It follows every speed limit. it will take in consideration with the Terran, you will have less accidents, and it's not good business for insurance because there's no need to buy insurance. Well,
or it lowers their rates.
Yeah.
It really lowers their rates. But you're the one that pointed that out to me, and I thought that was quite clever. I was thinking, oh, yeah, that's... You're right. The other one that you mentioned to me a long time ago was the one about that when before Los Angeles got the Rams back, you know, they didn't have any kind of
team
down there. And so all these other teams would use that, like, hey, we're going to move unless you build us a publicly supported
stadium.
They take
the city hostage.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hey, I'll leave Jacksonville if you don't give us a stadium. And they're scared because they don't want to lose their team to L.A. Yes.
And that happens all over. They play people off among themselves. And that's what really frustrates me. And that's why I think I'd like to see, goes back to that idea of everybody being able to understand how money works and how this, how it creates all these problems between peoples.
Because, you know, there's a, Seattle have a, is it Stranger? Those weekly magazines, right?
Oh, yeah, yes.
LA has LA Weekly. Yeah. And there's one in Orange County called OC Weekly. And there's one of the funny pages I like is Ask a Mexican. And this guy, all these people sometimes ask rude questions about Latino people, but sometimes it's a good one. So he can't explain in a humorous, but in the same way, educational one. Maybe they need someone like Ask Dave, where... They say, why are they doing this? This makes no sense. And you give economic explanation. And, you know, because I think for most people, it's very mystifying. It was mystifying for me until I took econ class. Like, once they explain, it's almost like, you know, when they do an eye examination,
right.
They put it, is it more clear with this lens or this one? You know, like, studying econ, seek world in a more clear, rational way that, it wasn't very familiar with, you know.
Now that you say that, there's a book out there, and I wish I could remember the, I should remember the, oh, Block. Walter Block is the author.
Mm-hmm.
He's with the, is it Lou Rockwell, I think, .com. And they're a free market site that that deals with the Austrian economics. He wrote a book a long time ago. I don't remember the title of it, but he explains a lot of these. There's a cartoon on the front of the book, and the cartoon is this very wealthy man, obviously a plutocrat, walking down the street, and there's this guy on the street who's begging money, and the plutocrat, and he's reaching out, the beggar is reaching out and touching the plutocrat, who's pulling his arm away, and he's telling him to go inherit his own money. And that book is just about all kinds of, you know, why we need prostitutes. How does this come about? Not how, why we need them, but how this all comes about.
Right.
All the free market ideas behind these different things that pop up, you know, drug deals. And, you know, it's been many years since I read that book, but if you just Google the name Walter Block or go to Amazon, I think his book would be on there.
I highly recommend Ross Robert. Do you know who that is?
No, I don't.
He is a professor at Stanford, and he's also part of Hoover Institute. But I don't necessarily agree with everything, but he has a guest on his podcast, Econ Talk. It's really fun to listen to his, you know, he will talk to people who are economists, but they're Keynesian or whatnot. Maybe he doesn't agree with them, but he humanized people by talking about economic issues. And he's been doing this for one of the oldest podcasts in the country, world. He's been doing it for 10 years from Stanford. And the podcast is called Econ Talk, and the Library of Economics and Liberty. And he's more, I think he is a libertarian guy, but yeah, check it out. If, you know, if you're curious about economic issues, Econ Talk with him, and you could scroll, like there's over 10 years worth of podcasts, and you could pick whichever one you want to talk to. He even talked to like Milton Friedman and Gary S. Beckers, I think.
Oh,
he was one of the acolyte of Freeman, but he used to write for Business Week, and he was more like explaining about not brain power, but you know, some people have capital, money, but others have their intelligence, right, creativity and things like that. And if you let those people roam around in a free society, they could do whatever they want. You know, look at all that. Russians and Chinese, they created this complex where they say, hey, just do your startup like Silicon Valley, but there's all this regulation. Silicon Valley happened because, not because government intervened. Yeah. It was a free individual decided to go there and start companies. Hewlett Packard, they're both students at Stanford, and they were thinking about going to work for some big company. And I don't know who their professor was, but hey, you guys are smart. You should start a company on own. And they did. They created Hewlett Packard in a garage. Nobody forced them to make it. It's an idea that they had. They thought they could create a product and service better than anyone else. And they did. And they were competing with IBM. Here they are. And you have Google, Facebook, Twitter. Well, Twitter is in San Francisco. But, you know, Netflix, they're all in the Silicon Valley. And it's because of these genius individuals saw that they needed some product or service that they didn't see they were offering, or they could provide it better. Like John Stagliano, going back to the beginning, he saw porn, but he didn't see any porn that he liked. Women with the big asses and things like that. And then we might laugh, but he brought this goods and service that, you know, was undersupplied, and he did it, and he found a lot of success because of it, you know? So,
And he funded it all his own by himself.
Credit card.
He took a huge risk. He took a huge risk, and you know, he made it. I have a lot of respect for him because of how he did it, and for a number of reasons. One being that we're really good friends, and
his product is very good.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And it was innovation because nobody thought about Gonzo. It was all like a film production where you have a crew and grip. Yes. And when he was a young person, he saw a new innovation, camcorder. He realized, I could be a performer, I could be a director, I could be a producer, I could write a script, I have to get girl. All of a sudden, you cut all these other people that tradition have been used to make a big production out of porn. He did it. He changed the business, really. And Gonzo stuff is very, very popular because of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know all the ins and outs or whatever. I just know little dots, and I can kind of connect the dots.
Sure.
Like anybody. John had his went through his tribulations to create his company before I met him.
Sure.
So I wasn't privy to any of that, but you know, we've talked about a few things, and that I just have a lot. I've started several businesses in my own life, so I know how difficult it is and how long it, and I started mine cash poor, which is the same way he did. Although he did have I didn't have credit cards when I started mine.
Yeah.
Because, but he did have credit cards that he could borrow on there.
Sure.
But you're paying a huge interest rate on those. That's 20 something percent or whatever. I mean, that's incredible. That's a huge gamble. And, but he did it.
Yeah. And I think, why am I forgetting his name? He is the management guru.
Drucker?
Yeah.
Peter Drucker?
Peter Drucker. And he was talking about credit card is another, I don't know who created it, but it was innovation too, because unless you have a house or something, you know, most people, if you use credit wisely, it could be converted into success like John.
Well, most people, that's how most money is created.
Yeah.
When you really think about it, most of the money is, you go to the store, you buy something for $100 and you give a credit card over, and then they take and you would sign a credit slip that says that, you know, Yoshi's going to pay this $100 back with interest.
Sure.
If he doesn't pay it in the prescribed period of time, that will be sent through to the credit card company. That immediately goes on their balance sheet.
Sure.
So now they have got an asset.
Right.
Now, what is the asset? The asset is that Yoshi promises I'm going to pay back $100 in the future. Yoshi just created $100 out of nothing.
Right.
Now they have an asset on their balance sheet. If it's a bank, which most credit cards are, then that $100 now can be lent out.
Right.
Now, they have to keep a certain amount of that money in reserve, we'll just say 10%. That means they can lend out $90 of money that Yoshi created, and it goes out in the community. Well, that $90 will go back into the bank, and 90% of that $90 or
Dave, let's say, argument's sake, in the beginning, 1,000 people download this podcast, right?
Yes.
By the time, there's probably like 2 people actually listen to this podcast.
probably.
You know, when I was just talking to you last 30, 40 minutes, like there's certain concepts, like I forgot even then, you know, because if you don't read it all the time,
very difficult. Absolutely.
I do forget it, but it is a fun subject, believe it or not, but most stereotype that people have, economists, is all glasses. They're doing number charts and graph and so on. But if you have a chance, just give yourself a chance to read up on it. And for me, it never ends. Legalizing prostitution, legalizing drugs. And I don't like this whole border notion. I really hate that governments prevent me from entering their country or leaving their countries. You know, it's just, I think people vote with their feet, and I don't like what's going on in North Korea, because most of those people just pretending to like the dear leader, because if they don't, they get shot. But when you give people freedom, they leave. If you do not doing a good job of protecting me, protecting my property, and doing all kinds of corrupt things, I'm going to leave this country. You have given me reason to leave your country, and that's how should people be giving freedom to leave. And
you know, there is along those lines, there is the Future Freedom Foundation, Jacob Hornberger's.
He's a wonderful man.
And his site is just www.fff.org.
Yeah.
And you go in there and you will be amazed at some of the stuff, the things that they will argue about.
Yeah.
Not argue, but when I say argue, that they will, they're making their point.
Yeah.
And
he's great, because I remember one time, you were kind enough to give me his periodical for 2 years. I read it, but I've seen also when he was talking public, how he made you feel good to be immigrant coming to this country.
Yes.
He basically said, thank you for coming to our country. You took a lot of risk.
That's correct.
And the fact that you're willing to do that. And most people do not want to leave home. It took a lot to leave there.
Yes.
So you're a risk taker. And this is a country made by risk takers. So you're going to be a great boon to this country. And whoever he was saying that to, that person just broke down and started crying, because that's not reception a lot of people get. And PJ O'Rourke, who is libertarian / conservative writer, in one of his books basically said, the Cubans who are willing to risk in a shark infested water to come to Miami, those are the people who will be good for this country, not this fear mongering by Donald Trump of the world, you know. And I believe legalizing prostitution and legalizing drugs, but the freedom of movement to leave. I don't like this place, I'm leaving. I think people should be given that right to do that.
Yes, it's their future. They're allowed to do what they, I believe that they're allowed, just like you're saying, that they're allowed to do what they want, as long as they're not harming somebody else.
Sure.
That old libertarian principle.
Well, we better get ready, because I have to go see my brother, and I think we should stop by your sister's place and hello to her. But yeah, Dave, it's interesting. Like, you know, whenever he explains construction business, it's really interesting. Love econ. I mean, I'm telling you, it's like Library of Alexandria over here, because you have so many econ books. But you know, like the fact that you are open to public, being honest about porn too. You know, and
yeah,
I don't want to hide stuff, you know, like transparency, you know, freedom of idea. So, you know, I had difference with John, but econ and porn, you can't argue with him. He loved both of those things. Like,
that's correct.
Twin pillars, you know, and
dancing.
Yeah,
he likes dancing and sports.
Quick note: Do you think drugs will be completely legal within the next 50 years?
Oh, do I think it will?
In 50 years.
Well, it depends on what the plutocrats want, the people that are in power. That's what depends on it. Now, all the populace can change that.
Yeah.
But they have to act in the same, in their interest, the same way the plutocrats are acting in their interest. And for the last, you know, since time began, it's always been some sort of, you know, I guess plutocrats is the best term for them. Elites, people that really they are controlling the money supply, the money system, and they can, you know, they have superpowers.
Whenever I think about that word, I think about those special interest group during the Roman time, putting pressure on all the emperor and Caesars afterwards. And it's probably true for places like Russia, where Putin has a lot of power, but I'm sure he has a backing of the rich people during, you know, their deed. And I believe, I love free market, but we had this conversation too. Mm-hmm. 2008, they made all this gamble, which is fine. It's their money. They lost everything. They want the government to bail them out. So they don't, you know, they're
right.
That's not free market.
No, not at all.
And it's not right. I mean, I know it sounds radical, but I'd rather the certain automobile company go bankrupt because they need to learn the lesson. They're irresponsible and we bail them out.
Well, it's the highest use of the money, the highest use that should prevail.
Yeah.
And obviously they weren't the best, highest use of that resource.
Right.
And
the market have answered about having cars. Yes. The Japanese and German will come in here and now Koreans, and I even heard Chinese might get into the business of a car. So
right.
The market will figure it out and we should have more faith in it. But all right, Dave. I'm glad you went to, you know, we're running out of time, but you were telling me the terror of downtown Seattle where all the sex business you know your stuff.
My sex business.
Yeah. You know the econ and you have a very good taste in economics and porn and but thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Yoshi.
Yeah, you helped me
it was a mutual. We both benefited each other.
You helped me. Let me stay with you. And you know, I don't think if it wasn't for you, I would have gotten a job with Evil Angel and Rick Hall too. Mm. And Jeff Martin, those three people that I met through Evil Angel booth. But yeah, it's sad. I just, like we were saying, I missed the booth, but time must change. And you know, I was saying John was smart enough to use camcorder and film for himself, but once we all get old, you know, I did think a lot of the people in the porn business made a mistake. They probably didn't anticipate the power of the internet. They probably thought the biggest danger to porn will be Republican Party and Christian Coalition, but I didn't see either. But internet is the very thing that
it's hard to keep ahead of the curve.
Yeah,
it really is. Any business,
yeah, it's always some young snot kid that you know,
because they'll look at it from a different angle that you weren't thinking of at all.
Yeah. And they created Brazzer and all those companies too. So
yes, absolutely.
And the whole cycle.
That's why you don't want to mandate anything.
Sure.
Because the solutions are out there and they will pop up.
Yes.
If we let it happen.
Right. And if you're sick and you have cancer, mandating government-sponsored medication, I don't really have a lot of trust in.
No.
The free market will take it out, because if you give people enough incentive to make something, they could make money. They will take
chance. Well, there's a number of things out there that claim that cancer has been cured, but that there are cures for it that are out there. Now, I haven't investigated a whole lot, but it's the same idea, you know. Maybe one of those cures is working.
Right.
Or would work.
But. And today, I'm watching HBO Game of Thrones, and everybody's upset that there's only a few, six episodes left in this season, 7 and 6 next two seasons. But if HBO is not doing a good job, some other network will make another hit show. And this is how it works, like competition, freedom, and let the free market take care of all. So, all right, Dave.
Yes.
Thanks, and
thank you.
You don't have a Twitter account, Facebook, right?
No.
All right. If you have a question for Dave, just email me, then I'll send it to Dave. That way I'm protecting his privacy. But if you have a smart question about econ or sex business in Seattle or construction, just email me at dumbyoshi@gmail.com and I'll send it to Dave. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Right. Thank you always, Dave. You've been a great friend, and thanks for all your help. And I'm glad you're back in Seattle, and go Huskies football.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right,
go
guys. Huskies. Thanks.